Hi, hello again, everybody, and a very hearty Omaha to wherever you may be this evening on a lovely Wednesday, February 22nd, a lovely transmission we're dropping down. This is Racing Refresh Happy Hour, Episode 3, titled, He's a Stenhouse. Get it? Brick House, Stenhouse. See what I did there? Ha ha, I'm a funny, funny guy. And speaking of funny, funny guys, look, if you think I am humorous, there is nobody quite as humorous as the man I'm about to bring onto this show. He is Racing Refresh Happy Hour's resident Valentine. He's the best man. He's the man with the dapper hair and the dapper beard. I wonder what products he used. Let's ask him. Let's bring on Calvin Best. How are you, brother?
I am amazing, as always, to be with you, Logan, on this Wednesday night. Actually, I don't use any products, especially at night. I got in a shower. I just did the little comb over, the little pompadour action, and I'm ready to talk about the Daytona 500 for the next hour, the Commercial 500, the two-wide train Tona 500, you know, many nicknames for this race. But there's one more person in our crew, Logan, that we have to introduce because she is the backbone of Racing Refresh Happy Hour.
No question about it. Behind every mediocre man is a woman whom I don't deserve. I'm talking about producer Peggy. Let's bring her in. Peggy, how the hell are you?
I am sad to have seen the sad shape that Ryan Blaney's car was in this past Sunday. But I'm happy to see my NASCAR.
Oh, look at that. Look, there's always a checkered flag in my future. Thank God. Yes, Ryan Blaney, frankly, he looked like your long-lost uncle, you know, the guy that has all the extra cars in the yard and the grass is going over him. That's what his car looked like with that duct tape, because if you can't fix it, you might as well duck it. But Peggy, we're moving on. It's okay. We're moving on to Fontana. Fontucky, as our own Crystal Clay calls it. Pretty similar, really. So, Peggy, we'll bring you back, but before we let you go, anything you want to say? You good? Are you ready? Are you ready for another great episode of Racing Refresh Happy Hour?
I'm so ready.
Well, you are. I mean, I call it a Mrs. Excitement. After she leaves me, she's going to go date the Daytona 500 winner, Mr. Excitement. Or you old school, there's Jimmy Spencer. Anywho, Peggy, we'll talk to you later because we got predictions to make. But me and Colin, we're going to kick this thing old school style. Let's say pit bull style. See what I did there, Colin? Our show creator is he's going to be virtual this week. We do have a fine video as he checks in from our friends to the north. But we're going to keep it down here in the Midwest and then way Party Down South. That used to be a reality show, folks, with Colin Best. Remember that reality show, Party Down South?
Yeah, I did. And
it was like a redneck Jersey Shore.
Yeah, it was actually filmed here in my area. Really? The Orange Beach, Northwest Florida area, and
I'm not gonna lie to you. I wasn't a Jersey Shore guy, but I kind of dug Party Down South.
No, I didn't. It brought bad taste to this area. It's something we don't speak of.
All right, fine, but I can still hear what's his name saying, "I'm a Boudreaux baby." Anyway, let's talk about NASCAR because I believe that's why we're here. Check out Colin and I's reality TV show podcast, In Our Minds. We'll let you know. Anywho, let's go ahead and let's talk some NASCAR. But to do that, we've got to have our beautiful, beautiful producer hit us with a graphic, our race recap. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Race review, boom, recap, whatever you want to call it. It's good. Anywho, that looks lovely. Don't you agree?
Oh, I love it. Peggy did a fantastic
job. All right. So let's talk first at Zane Smith. He got the dub in the trucks. He absolutely, for Front Row Motorsports, actually, got the dub in the trucks. Talk about, Colin, what'd you think of that truck race? Because there's not a lot to unpack of the actual race because it was caution filled. I mean, we're just running laps with a mist. It turned into the Mr. 250 there for a while. So thoughts on Zane Smith getting the win. I wish there was more action to truly talk about, but there's not a boatload. And then thoughts on the weather not cooperating and NASCAR's decision-making during the land of cautions.
Yeah, so, you know, the cautions was kind of a theme of this weekend's Daytona Speed Week. I thought Zane Smith did a fantastic job. The Truck Series is just filled with, you know, unexperienced talent or veterans. That's either one of the two. There's no in between. Especially with so much news headlines running into the Truck Series with Zane Smith, who was the champion, coming back. Haley Deegan is getting a new ride at Thor Sport, and Travis Pastrana making his debut, or not debut in the Truck Series, but his awaited return to the Truck Series to get more experience for the Daytona 500 on Sunday. I thought this was an absolute cluster of a race, and it's disappointing because when you go to Speed Weeks every single year, the Truck Series is usually the best race or one of the best races of the week. It is the entertaining kickoff to the exciting weekend that it was. And it turned out it wasn't. Mother Nature had other plans, and people in the field had other plans. So surely disappointing start to the Truck Series season, but Zane Smith did go back-to-back. We saw that a lot this week. Out of the two out of three races, someone went back-to-back. And, you know, now the Truck Series is off for a couple weeks as we see them next at Las Vegas, I believe.
Yes, Las Vegas, two weeks in that bright light city. Gonna save my soul, gonna set my soul on fire, as Elvis Presley once said. And yeah, in NASCAR's defense, let's preface it with this, because it's a fair discussion, a good point. We have seen in recent seasons when NASCAR tries to run in the rain, really it not pan out. Of course, there was I believe it was 2 years ago now, the absolute cluster that was New Hampshire out and whatever you want to call it, where Kyle Busch and a few other cars were taken out of the race pretty much on lap one because the track was in no condition to be driven on as far as having a race goes. So, and that we know, I know it's controversial to some. I don't care for it at all. Some didn't mind it, but the COTA mess, the first year we had that, I thought was an absolute, again, travesty. I can still vividly see Martin Truex, I believe, not being able to slow down and hit, I believe it was Cole Custer's car at the time. And that to me, is not a good look for this sport. I remember Kevin Harvick speaking out heavily against it. So I want to preface it with that because I have been very clear on, I appreciate the fact that for a while there, they were trying to kind of thread that needle. They gave it a shot because sometimes we all feel like, couldn't we run in this very light mist or the easiest of raindrops or drizzle? We all have thought that at some point or another, I'm sure, all of us. And because I know I have. And until they genuinely started to give it a shot, like Loudon and Coda, I felt that way. And it's like, well, let's give it a, let's like, as long as it's not a monsoon, you know, let's you know, that kind of mist sort of thing. We obviously all remember the Jet Dryer 500 at Texas. That was great. And, you know, I always thought, man, wish we could give it a shot. So the last few years they did, and it bit them. Let's be honest about it. It bit them. It made it look bad for the safety of the sport and, frankly, the professionalism of the sport. And every now and again, the sport ended up looking like, I'm just going to say it, folks, a bunch of goofballs. So with that preface, do you think NASCAR made any wrong calls with the kind of stops and starts of the race? Obviously, it was a rain-shortened win eventually for Zane Smith, but again, we had a caution within two laps because of some very light misting. Of course, we have to remember Daytona is so big that it can be raining in one spot and clears a bell in the other. And so, what do you think of the I don't want to call them controversial, but every judgment call is a little controversial. So what do you think of NASCAR's calls on stopping, starting the race multiple times, and then eventually calling it official?
You know, NASCAR the past 3 years has been bitten by this weather bug. It was 2020 in Texas, where Harvick essentially, it was the start of the downward slope of losing his championship on that magnificent run he had that year. Then in 2021, Kyle Busch gets affected in New Hampshire. And then last year at Daytona in August, when the whole field careened in the turn one, and it was just raining. Everyone was for a lap and a half or was saying that it was raining, and they just barrel in a one, and half the field gets taken out. I applaud the Truck Series for trying to get that race and finish under green. I think we touch on it later with the 500. I think every race, especially Daytona, when you're kicking off the season. Because for each of those three series, the opening race at Daytona is the biggest race for each of those series. I think that's the consensus that I think you would share as well, Logan. And, you know, if they didn't finish the race and they postponed it, where would they put it up? Because you'd have qualifying for the ARCA Menards series at Daytona on Saturday, you have qualifying for the Xfinity Series on Saturday, you have final cup practice on Saturday. There's really no way that you could have gotten that truck race done on a Saturday. So having them get it to halfway and call the race, I think that was the smart idea. Granted, I think it's a stupid decision, because if you look at it, they could have finished after the Xfinity Series event. And, you know, they could have ran with perfect conditions for the last 40-ish laps, but they didn't, and they moved on. They just kind of got out of Daytona as fast as they possibly could. And, you know, I don't hate them for that. So can NASCAR do better when it comes to weather, especially at these big super speedways? They absolutely can. But it goes to show, no matter what time of year, Florida for weather is just unpredictable. And, you know, that's what we saw on Friday night.
And you know, because Colin, hey, you're my favorite Florida man. So, look, we have to remember also that Daytona is crowded, folks. And you got to remember, those weekends where all three series are running, the garage is busy. The garage is busy. The teams are busy. It is a absolute just madhouse on any week, let alone the biggest week of the year in the sport, being the Daytona 500 and Speed Weeks. So I thought NASCAR made the right call. Is it exciting? Is that what we want to see? No. But sometimes, especially during one of the bigger weeks of the year, the biggest week of the year, frankly, you need to cut your losses and just kind of move on, because Xfinity teams need that garage and time and work. And Lord knows the Cup Series and everybody it brings out and all the legends, they need all that space. You tried, Mother Nature didn't cooperate. And as Colin put it better than I did, NASCAR tried to do the whole, let's see if we can run with a little bit of rain thing. We all have thought it, like I said. It did not work out. We got to move on. And so I don't want any more chances, because I want to be entertained, absolutely. And watching half the field get wrecked when it was avoidable is not entertaining. It's not. The drivers should settle it. The drivers should settle it. If they wrecked half the field, that's their business. I don't want anything to do with what NASCAR could or should have done to affect any race that I watch of the three series. All right, let's move on to the Xfinity Series. Austin Hill, we praised him a lot before coming on the air. Let's talk about it. He won Xfinity. Of course, he ended up missing the Daytona 500. He ran with Beard Motorsports, but he bounced back in a big way. Won Daytona, the Xfinity Series. What do you think of Austin Hill, and what do you think his ceiling is for Super Speedway, Scala?
I think the ceiling for him is the sky's the limit as far as he's willing to go. I mean, in the past 3 years since he's been introduced to the Truck Series and NASCAR as a whole, I think he's quickly becoming one of the the best of the new generation who's coming in to super speedway racing. I mean, this guy has won at Daytona now three times, twice in the Xfinity Series, once in the trucks. He's won at Atlanta. He's won at Talladega. He's absolutely killing it. And I think it's a understatement of the year is that I think this was the most impressive super speedway win he's had in his career. For him being part of a two-car team with RCR and having his teammate wreck out about 30, 40 laps before the end of the race, he essentially held off about three separate teams for the entirety finish of the race. And he even made the pass. He was at 1.3rd, and on the final two laps, he passed two cars and he came home with a win on Saturday. I think he's probably as good, if not better, than Denny Hamlin at this point, at young in his career, because we haven't seen him be on the cup level yet, because it's a whole different ballgame in super speedway racing when you get to cup than you are Xfinity or truck. But I feel like if you give him time, I think he can become, like, when it comes to super speedways, you know, we talk about Brad Keselowski, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, and then Austin Hill could also be in that conversation as well.
Well, go ahead and make a way too soon prediction from where we are in the business of that. If you missed our post-race show after Daytona on Sunday, we made some way too soon predictions. Go check it out in the archive. We might have picked the 66th annual Daytona 500. We and a guy we all used to know, let's say. But if you want to know who I'm talking about, go watch that post-race show. So, Colin, let's make another way too soon prediction this week. Is he the next great super speedway racer we're talking about in NASCAR?
He has the potential. He has the tools. Something, you know, it's almost NFL combine season, so I'm going to give you one of these little $5 words, $10 words. He has the intangibles. Yes, the intangibles, the X factors in order to get it. I mean, certainly as long as he stays with RCR, I think he has the car underneath him when it comes to super speedways. No one takes more seriously than old RC and the RCR engine shop and everyone there. So I think, you know, for Austin Hill, the sky's the limit. He certainly has talent enough to be where he's at. He is a former Truck Series champion. That's how he made it to the Xfinity Series. He has a couple wins on multiple different racetracks, and he's a racer, man. I think he has at all, and he also has an intimidation factor, because last time when we were at Daytona in August, I had the pleasure of walking in the garage area, and I saw him. He's a big dude. Like, no one's going to mess with him. He's certainly that Ryan Newman-esque stature in the garage where you don't want to mess with him. But, you know, Austin Hill has a neck and Ryan Newman didn't. That's the only difference.
Both holding down that right side of the car very well. Yeah. Big burly good men look like they could go hunting and skin a fish.
Yeah.
Colin, I got to ask you, because I don't want to shortchange Xfinity, but we have to a hair. You know, you're down there in Florida. Did you get to any racing this weekend?
I actually left the state. I went to South Alabama Speedway, mm-hmm. up an hour north of where I'm at, mm-hmm. and they had some open car tests for some super late model action. So I got to see that.
All right. Well, do you got plans to maybe head for the Coke Zero Sugar 400 in the summertime?
Well, there's two ways I can get there. I can either pay or I give up an old buddy of mine who used to work here a call and see if he can get me some free passes, but you know, we'll figure it out. But I mean, that's gonna be such a big race in August. That's the last race before the playoffs for the Cup Series. It's a no-brainer. When I went last year, as you know, it got rained out, mm-hmm. probably an hour too late. We were there for a very long time. I gotta say, if I've ever said anything bad about the Daytona International Speedway, their staff was really dumb on that rain out. It was lightning and thundering. We were in the infield, and they were like, yeah, you can't seek shelter. We're in the middle of the infield. We're in the fan zone, and they're like, yeah, you can't seek shelter because lightning, they shut down the entire track. And then on Sunday, you know, I feel like NASCAR should just, like, if you remember that race, when NBC came on, because I watched it later, when NBC came on the air, they were already under two to go. Like that, there was two to go until the green flag dropped. And I wish NASCAR had that urgency when it comes to pre-races. Like it's go time. We gotta, it's race day. We gotta get going. And they didn't have any Coke Zero sugar beverages at the Coke Zero Sugar 400. I could not find one for sale, but I did find Busch Light. They did run out of water at noon on a Sunday in August, but hey, I had Busch Light. So,
well, that's been stories from the track with the best man, Colin Best. Yeah.
IndyCar does it so much better. They don't run out of water.
We love both series here at Racing Refresh. We love both.
Says it right here. Right here. Yeah. Senior open wheel rider.
There it is. Rider. We love both series. All right, Colin. Rick Stenhouse. He wins the 65th annual Daytona 500. Give me your overarching thoughts. I'll let you take the floor on it, and then we'll really break it down.
What an underdog win. I think this is what the Daytona 500, you know, when we think about the stories, the Michael McDowells, the now Ricky Stenhouse Juniors, these guys who, you know, are kind of these journeymen. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. has turned into the journeyman driver ever since he left Roush and has moved on to different teams. I think this is great for him. I think this is great for the sport. I mean, he's always been one of the best super speedway drivers that we've had in the Cup Series. And, you know, it's sort of this NASCAR, and how can you not be romantic about it? It took Earnhardt 18 years, but it only took Stenhouse maybe 5-7 years. It took, you know, Tony Stewart never won it, but Trevor Bayne won it in his first time, you know. It's sort of this romance. You can't ride it. You know, it's the NFL joke, you know, the scripts. I don't think anyone had it in their script that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. would win the 500 except them. And honestly, if we're talking about, you know, how good things are, you know, for Brad Doherty and Jody and Tad Geschechter to finally have a win at one of the biggest races of their career, you know, we thought 2 years ago that JTG Doherty might close their doors. They weren't getting the funding. And now they just won the Daytona 500. So I'm very happy for Ricky and JTG Doherty. I think, you know, this is an amazing win for them.
Yeah, we've talked a lot behind the scenes about where JTG is as an organization right now. We're not sure. That there seems to be a lot of uncertainty. And this is such a huge win for them. And you just can't overstate it. It might not be the story people were thinking of when you think big-time stories of the Daytona 500, but you cannot overstate at all how big this is for that team, that organization. I have our producer telling us that Ricky took his trophy and he ate at the Waffle House last night. I did see that video, but let's go a little deeper into that. Do you think that win starves off the Ricky Stenhouse critics? Cause he's got a few.
I think it starves off him more. It gives him a little breathing room. But it we'll see in about 5 weeks where everyone really lands on him, because, you know, no one knew who Trevor Bayne was and he won the 500 and he went through his rookie year and everyone expected him to have the rookie, you know, woes. And he still continued to have them, even though he was with Roush Fenway when they were just god awful. I mean, he still wasn't one of the best drivers in the Cup Series level. I feel like he needed more time in the Xfinity Series. And we saw last year with Trevor Bayne and Joe Gibbs in a part-time schedule, he absolutely knocked it out of the park. And if anyone deserved a full-time Xfinity Series ride, it's him. But for Ricky Stenhouse, you know, he's still in that one car underfunded team with pretty big sponsors, by the way. I mean, Glad and Cottonelle, that's a big name brand in an American, you know, the economic culture. So for him, this may help him get a boost to JTG Doherty. This may be the win that keeps them in business for the next 5-10 years, because they could bring on sponsors. But I think if we take the flip side, and I'm kind of a realist here, at least we know who's going to finish 16th in the standings at the end of the year. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't think Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is going to make it past the first round.
Well, let's be – we don't – with the way this car is, we don't know that he's made the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yes, you know, it would be very unlikely that he's going to miss it now. That's fair.
Yeah.
But it's no longer a guarantee that he's going
to miss it. Yeah, I forgot. There's no top 30.
With this car and the no top 30, there is no guarantee. Yeah, this win is huge for JTG. It might be the thing about the Trevor Bayne win was, I mean, the Wood Brothers weren't looking good. It gave them that little shot in the arm they needed to slowly build their way back to where they are now. Of course, they're a satellite team with the captain and things are going pretty well, but they were, I mean, at one point it was pretty dire straits for the Wood Brothers. I mean, it was looking unlikely. So you can't overstate how big it is. You know, we have a Ohio connection to the team. Again, Brad Doherty played for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm excited about it. Good for Ricky. I think Ricky is a good guy. You know, I think he's a great plate racer. He's just a little too aggressive, but that's what it takes to win today's Daytona and Talladega. That's the reality of it. Those races, Daytona is the aggression 500. You got to make the right moves at the right times now. It's survive in advance, essentially. But let's talk about a guy that he was close to getting that elusive first one. Of course, I'm talking about our good friend, our good buddy, my favorite driver and yours. Facetious is right there. Our favorite concealed carry member. Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch almost got that elusive first Daytona 500 to set his resume. And it would have been, what a poetic story. 25 years plus one day. To the the legendary win of the late great Dale Sr. He goes to RCR, does Kyle Busch, and what would have been his first official start there, and he almost wins the Daytona 500. And if it was 1998 rules, he would have won the Daytona 500. But for those Kyle Busch detractors, it ain't 1998. What'd you think about Kyle Busch coming so close to winning the 500? Because even Austin Dillon said after the race he was hoping to push Kyle to victory. You know, because Kyle, you know, Dillon's got a 500. Don't get me wrong; you can always have more. I mean, we'll take those plenty. But what'd you think about Kyle Busch coming oh so close? And way too soon prediction. I asked our good friend Sunday this same question. Do you think Kyle Busch does get that 500 someday?
You know, for one thing, I was thinking as the laps went down and I had to go somewhere, so I didn't catch the race on Fox. I watched it on MR. I was listening to an MRN. And then when they announced that Kyle Busch took the lead in the 500, I thought back to the duels on Thursday night where he got spun out by Suarez, you know, old RC came on the radio and said, "We're going to win the 500. You know, we are." He almost called a shot. He almost Babe Ruthed himself into the Daytona 500. You know, and I think Kyle brings up an interesting point. You know, he did lead at the Daytona 500 mile marker. For the scheduled distance, he led at the 500 mile. And in theory, if this was 1998, he would have been a Daytona 500 champion, but he wasn't. And I also said this on the post 500 show that you can catch out, is that, you know, should an event like the Daytona 500 finish under yellow? Because the Indianapolis 500 people in that world, when the race finished under yellow in 2000, it was an uproar on social media. And, you know, we finally decided to go to green, white checkers and hell, even in 2022, they even red flagged the event just so they can finish under green at the scheduled 500 mile event. They actually got to lap 200, and you know, it was a 500 mile race. So, you know, for Kyle Busch, it does suck. I think, you know, he will get a 500, but honestly, listening the past couple of years, the attitude, you know, that, you know, people like Junior and all these super speedway legends say, or Hamlin, you know, it just doesn't seem like, you know, he's like, oh, woe was me. We always have bad luck at the 500. We always have bad luck at these super speedway events. And, you know, I feel like he just brings that upon himself. You know, I feel like, you know, Hamlin always goes into it like, oh, we can win. And he was able to finish the Daytona 500, yet Kyle was not. It's just interesting in mindset and championship attitude.
No question about it. Look, you are what you speak. There's no doubt about that. And speaking of you being all what you speak, you know, if you've watched previous incarnations of this show, as my dog says, you'll know Tyler Lawler. Let's kick it to Lawler's rant.
With the new season of Racing Refresh starting, I would like to take the time to thank Mr. Appeal for everything that he did over the past many, many years with the Racing Refresh family. I would like to thank him for everything, you know, that he's done for myself, giving me direction and guidance to where I am today. And I also want to thank you, Mr. Loganity. I know it's something that you'll never hear me say again, but I want to thank you and Adam for taking Racing Refresh to another level this year. That being said, let's talk shop. So, 2023 Super Bowl of all NASCAR races started kind of timid, if you ask me. I watched 95% of the entire race, except for probably a good chunk of the, maybe the second segment. That being said, I was excited to see Ricky Stenhouse Jr. pull off the win for JTD Daugherty. Man, I have a problem saying that. Making Brad Daugherty the first African-American to win as an owner. Very exciting to see the diversity in NASCAR nowadays. Also, I'm very excited to say that Kyle Busch, he looked like he was performing very well with his new teammate of Austin Dillon. Now, only time will tell if Kyle Busch turns into a wash or if it actually was a great plan for him to make the switch. That being said, it was very good to see how well Travis Pastrana performed, being that this is his first time in an actual NASCAR Cup Series car. To start last and finish 11th, running as high as 9 at one point, man, you can't beat that. Now, he did cause that big wreck at the end, but I think myself, I would also be just as aggressive at the end. That being said, I look forward to where this season is going to go. Being that it is Kevin Harvick's last season, I can see, you know, it going one of two ways, just like, you know, Jeff Gordon, how it was just the Jeff Gordon show. And before and after every race, it was nothing but talks about Jeff Gordon. But I also think that Kevin Harvick this year could probably pull off 4, maybe 5 wins. I'd love to see the 4, you know, just because it's for the win. But and I can see him going to the final 4 this year. But with that being said, I don't think he'll win this season. As always, I like to make my prediction for the season. This year, I predict Kyle Busch. I think Kyle Busch is going to come out strong and he's going to finish strong. I think he's going to win the 2023 regular season, as well as he will win the NASCAR Cup Championship. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity you're giving me to still allow me to be a part of the podcast, even though my schedule does not allow me to be, and allowing me to do some pre-recorded stuff. So I want to thank you guys for that. And hey, keep watching Racing Refresh. See where we'll go next.
Look, no question about it. And we thank you, Lawler, for all that you've done to contribute to where Race and Refresh is, and now Race and Refresh Happy Hour as a show. We owe you the biggest debt of gratitude, just as we do AJ Peel, for all that you have done to lay the foundation of where we are, and most importantly, where we're going. So thank you, and we're glad that you're still going to be a part of this show in any way, shape, form you desire. You're one of the founding members, so you let us know, and we'll make it happen. So it was great to hear from Tyler Lawler one more time. Before we get to our happy hour headlines, Colin, what did you think of those predictions?
Yeah, let's do it. Oh, sorry. I had a brain fart there.
That's all good, bro.
I think your dog always wants to make some predictions too, but for Kyle Busch to be the Cup Series champion at the end of the year, I think it would be the ultimate, I guess I told you so, for Joe Gibbs. After learning during Speed Weeks that, you know, it wasn't, you know, they were looking for sponsors, and then, you know, part of there was something about Joe's money being involved in keeping him stay. To be honest, if he does win at all, I think it would be the crescendo to his career. I mean, he would be a three-time Cup Series champion. He'd be, I think, solidified as one of the all-time greats, and then a future first-round Hall of Famer.
All right. Well, I agree with you. I hope Lawler's wrong, though, as a fan. And now we'll hit those happy hour headlines. That's right. God, we love happy hour headlines. That graphic's fantastic, Colin, that neon. All right, let's get into it. Just a couple to touch on this week. One near and dear to my heart, though, but we'll talk about that in a moment. First, Trackhouse is locking up their drivers. They have both through at least 2025. They did not give full details of the contract extensions both Suarez and Ross Chastain signed, but that it seems to be multiple years, and it's going to be a while. Matter of fact, it was joked that they'll be gray in Ross Chastain's beard by the time his contract is up. What do you think of Trackhouse locking down their drivers? I think they're building something pretty special. What say you?
I think they're also building something special. The thing about locking down two of these drivers is when we get later in the year, the silly season that we're going to have is going to be pretty tame. Other than, I think the biggest name still left is Denny Hamlin, who's still up in the air for 2024 because his contract expires at the end of the year. You know, it's going to be too early to talk about that, and that's for another show. But for Ross Chastain and Daniel Suarez to be locked down in a place where they know they're comfortable at and they know they can grow and develop their talent, you know, I think this is an absolute win for Trackhouse. They're building a championship organization. And I think, you know, I think some Bill France Cups are coming in their future.
Look, I agree. I think they're really off on the right footing. And I think they're going to expand rather quickly. You know, I think you'll see them get a third car and a fourth car. I don't know when, don't know where, but I think within the next 2 to 3 seasons, you'll see that. And so where's the Chargers going to come from and all that? Different show, different topic, different time. But Trackhouse is making a name for themselves. Of course, we knew that when they paid a king's ransom to buy Chip Ganassi's NASCAR, essentially, team. So we know how serious that Justin Marks and Pitbull are taking this, and they continue to prove that week in, week out. They had a breakout year last year, and it looks like they're poised to follow up on that even bigger. All right, next. Now a topic near and dear to my heart. Didn't think I'd have to talk about it in this manner, though, especially this soon. My main man, the king, old Richard Petty, look, there's nobody quite like him. When the king talks, the whole sport listens, and he proved that again this week as during a media availability Saturday morning, I believe. He was asked, is he frustrated by, you know, not having the same amount of control that he's used to, and he said that yes, he was. Now, reportedly, according to Nate Ryan, he said that with a laugh, but it was still kind of awkward and for everybody involved. He said that he and Jimmy agree on how to run a race team about 50% of the time. Other than that, he was very complimentary of Jimmy Johnson and the stuff that he's bringing in and sponsorships and all that. So a lot's being talked about, especially right before Daytona. It created a bit of a firestorm. I think that those that aren't really in the petty bubble kind of forgot that he still had the ability to make headlines in the sport. When he speaks, people listen. That's because of who he is, whether it's right or wrong. So, but he mentioned kind of frustration at his kind of diminished role in what is now Legacy Motor Club. There was a lot of conflicts reported on his ownership situation. Mike Joy made clear during the Daytona 5 broadcast, which I thought was very poignant of him, to make clear that Richard Petty does not own any of Legacy Motor Club, to at least Mike Joy's knowledge. And more importantly, that deal to sell the rest of his shares was during the original deal with Maury Gallagher and had nothing to do with Jimmy Johnson, because a lot of the media narrative, and frankly, I thought it as well, it was kind of a Jimmy Johnson in Richard Petty to some extent out. Turns out that was not the case at all. Jimmy Johnson and Maury Gallagher is a separate deal, being co-owners, and Richard is still on, obviously, as team ambassador and Mike Beam as team president. All right, Colin, I obviously have a lot of thoughts on this, but what were your thoughts on Richard Petty's comments Saturday morning, and then they slowly trickled out by Saturday afternoon, and then it created a bit of a firestorm?
So my initial thoughts about it were, you know, this is sort of Petty leaving the sport, not as someone, as an entity who's within the sport, but as a businessman, as a person who makes decisions about a race team from day in and day out. That those days are now over. And certainly over the past 10, 15 years, Petty as the Petty Racing organization has not been at the levels that it was in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. It has fallen on some hard times, and there's even points that the Petty racing team, or Petty Enterprises, Petty, whatever you want to call them, could have folded at any one of those points during the past 20 years, and somehow they didn't. You know, we talked about this before the show, that, you know, Petty, although he was a great driver, and although he still is the best driver to have ever sat behind a steering wheel in NASCAR, he hasn't made the best business decisions. It's sort of like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was a great basketball player, but when it comes to running the Charlotte Hornets, it hasn't been so well. Now with 2311, I think Denny Hamlin does the day-to-day operations, and Jordan just, you know, cash it, writes the checks, which I think is fine for that organization. 2311 is thriving. But the echoes of what could have been for Petty as a whole, we were talking about it before the show with Adam Petty, who passed away in 2000. If he was still here, where would Petty Enterprises be? You know, Petty Enterprises could have won championships with Adam behind the wheel. Adam could have been the next best thing, you know, contending with the likes of Harvick's and the Kurt and Kyle Busches of the world. Does Jimmy Johnson win 7 championships with Adam Petty behind the wheel? We'll never know. But certainly that, and the poor business decisions that Petty made, certainly will reverberate throughout the NASCAR legacy as a whole, and where it's going to be. Petty with Maurice Gallagher and Jimmy Johnson, I think that Petty would be leaving that team that he built all the way back in the 50s in really good hands. And I think Gallagher and Johnson can take Legacy MC to the next level and return them to a championship winning organization.
Well, you know, I think a lot of what you said is true. People have to remember, number one, Richard Petty hasn't had day-to-day operation control per se since Boston Ventures bought into Petty Enterprises in like 08. And then it became even less so when Boston Ventures and Petty Enterprises went under, and then George Gillette bought into the team and merged with Petty, because at that point, George Gillette bought in with Evernham and Evernham Motorsports, because if you want to get technical, you know, Casey Kane drove for Richard Petty for a couple of years because they were in the midst of the Evernham Motorsports merger that would become Richard Petty Motorsports with Andrew Murstein, where Petty would own varying degrees of the team, but he did not run the day-to-day operations. He has not ran the day-to-day operations to a great degree for a decade plus. What I think happened, here's my thought, because I studied Richard insanely. I do, but I want to stress, I've never met the man. I was not there, but I feel to be that I'm a very informed opinion. You have to remember something about Richard. Even in his prime, he was blunt. That's just the way he is. I mean, see his comments about Dale Sr. in June of 2001. We know he's got some controversial views on women in the sport. We know he was not thrilled about NASCAR going to a playoff system. Richard Petty is not shy. He has never been shy. He calls it like he sees it. That's one of the things that makes him endearing to the NASCAR community. But occasionally, he says something that makes some headlines, like the Danica Patrick quote, or a few years ago when Kyle Busch was knocking on 200 wins, he made clear, pretty much made clear, that's not the same thing as what I did, okay, is what he would say. So, number one, he's blunt. That's the way he's always going to be. That's only going to get worse at nearly 86 years old, because I don't know if you've met an elderly person, people. They don't have a filter. People that say, well, he should have thought before he said, they are 85, 86 years old. They just think about what they're going to say. They don't have the capacity, usually, not trying to generalize, but most people that age don't have the capacity to go, maybe shouldn't say that way. What I think happened is I think Richard is probably adjusting to his quote-unquote lesser role, even though I don't know how lesser it is, because he was all over he was at the truck series and spoke with all the GMS drivers and all that. And so he was obviously at the 500, and, you know, we've seen him, we saw him at the duels with the Legacy Motor Club gear. Like, they're putting him out front as if he is an owner. And really, that's been, to our knowledge, pretty much the reality of it. I think the problem he might be having is the rest of his business partners probably weren't as hands-on as Gallagher and now Jimmy Johnson are. And so he probably still had to do more of the heavy lifting. But I don't think he meant it as there's some huge issue. I think he's probably struggling with some of that in terms of change, because when you've done things your way for so long, you're going to struggle with that. I mean, that's just the way it is. At 85, when you're making a major change as this is, you're going to struggle with some changes, and I think it's okay to have some bittersweet feelings about it. And I want to be honest with you. I thought most of the media, especially the ESPN headline, the AP headline, I thought they did their best to paint those quotes in the worst light possible, when we don't know if that's how he meant it, in terms of I'm unhappy, or AP said a dethroned king, and ESPN said Petty irked at Johnson. That is not what those comments meant. Maybe it was, but you can't possibly know that based on those comments. He was honest about probably being frustrated about some of the changes that are going on and him not having as much input as he used to. That does not mean there's an issue there. If anything, especially ESPN, you really pissed me off because of the fact you don't even care about racing anymore. And that's the headline you went with. You don't even care about NASCAR. You don't. And you created a headline to try and create tension. That was classic clickbait 101. Anyone want to tell me otherwise, they're wrong. So here's my issue. Like, at the end of the day, maybe it was just a frustrated moment, and maybe it was something that needed to be said to create a better communication set down the line. Maybe this is the start of, oh, I didn't know Richard was upset. Maybe that's Maurice or Jimmy. Well, let's figure out a way to keep him more involved in what he's talking about. Because people have this idea, or this, like, you're going to disagree. We've had disagreements. It's like, there's just moments you're going to disagree when it happens. And what happens when you properly disagree? You find a resolution to it. People always think the end of the world when a public disagreement happens, where they see an NFL player screaming at a player on the sideline. They're going to have some fights. When you're around people and change are happening, there's going to be some disagreements. So what I think was Richard probably just was as blunt as he could be about it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he meant it. You know, there's a huge issue there. Let him be the team ambassador because that's the right role for him. Could he have a say in some day-to-day activities? Sure. What I mean by that is, hey, do you think we should renew Erik Jones? He should give his input for that. Not the final say, but he's earned the right to have a say in who drives his beloved 43 and to a lesser extent the 42. He's earned that, whether he has ownership or not, because he is the 43. That's his entire brand. Colin, you and I never saw him race. You and I never saw him race, let alone win. But when we see the 43, we still think Richard Petty.
Yeah.
When we see the 43 in that font, it does not matter what his actual ownership percentage is. He should always have a say in what happens to the 43. Again, a say is not the final say. It means give your opinion, give your input. I don't see how that's a major issue.
Yeah, there's only one person in NASCAR who has a final say over any number, and that's the three. That's Richard Childress. Right. He's the only one.
Yeah, that's it. So, but Richard Petty should have a say over the 43 and to a lesser extent the 42 because that is his father's number, as long as they have it in his stable. Other than that, I don't think Richard is deluding himself into thinking he should run a business, but maybe he's been a little left out of some meetings where he'd like to at least just sit there and observe. With an older person like him, you don't know what small thing he might be talking about to make him feel more involved. It's like the old, go visit your grandparents. Just go sit with them.
Yeah.
And so maybe just a matter of pushing 86 years old or whatever, you know, hey, just maybe he's been left out of some meetings he's heard about where he would have just liked to give his input, not make a final decision. And I think Jimmy said they'll talk. He told the AP that. Any other thoughts, any other questions, comments on the – in closing on my end, unless you got other comments, I think they'll get this worked out. I don't think there's a major issue. I think it's a minor breakdown of communication, and frankly, it's growing pains because you got Gallagher with Petty and Johnson and Mike Beam. Frankly, if it wasn't two icons, there's too many irons in the fire. There's too many, you know, the old saying, too many chiefs, not enough Indians. That's just the way it is. Like, but because it's Richard Petty, he is owed that, whether he is truly an owner of any sort or not, because he is the legacy in Legacy Motor Club. No disrespect to Jimmy Johnson, but you can't call it Legacy Motor Club without 2 7-time champions. And there's only 2 living. So any other thoughts before we move on and make some predictions?
I'll be honest. I'm going to be one of the talking heads who say no. I didn't really look into the Petty situation. That's more of your department, since you are you're a big Petty fan as well as, you know, just an avid watcher of them.
In a word, obsessed. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, you know, this is what Legacy MC is building towards is the future. You know, Trackhouse came along 2311. They're building towards the future. Legacy MC is what we're seeing right now. Because we're going to see this with teams like when Joe Gibbs leaves and Hendrick leaves and Richard Childress and Jack Roush leave, we're going to see a changing of a guard for all of these teams. We're just now seeing with Petty first. That's really what we're seeing. And then we'll see it down the line with other teams as time marches on. But
sure.
You know,
I think that's very possible and true. But yeah, I just think that probably a minor breakdown of communication. I don't think Richard Petty's going anywhere right now. I think he'll probably be in the sport until he retires. He'll have some role with that team, and Team Ambassador seems to be it. Probably just a minor breakdown of communication, and hopefully everybody gets in a room this week and, hey, Richard, where are you coming from? Because even without ownership, as Jimmy Johnson said after the Daytona 500, when the king speaks, I'll listen, because he's the king. That's what Jimmy Johnson said to the media after his crash in the 500. All right, we're running short on time, but, you know, there's somebody that hadn't been involved a whole lot with this show this week, and he usually is. Oh, that's right, Adam. So obviously he was a little bit too busy this week to sit down with us and have this lovely Richard Petty discussion and others, but he's got an update from the North. Let's kick it to that. And it's a new segment called Adam from Canada.
Port Alberni, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island, which is where I went to visit some friends to watch the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. This is Race Central, where we gather to watch the races, although it's not quite ready yet. And we figured first, to make it a true Canadian weekend, we better go visit the local hockey team. Shout out to the Alberni Valley Bulldogs. Well, now that we got the place decked out, let's have a look at our decorations. Welcome, race fans. Looks like we've got a capacity crowd here at what we call Boondocks North. We got the crowd in there. Hey, Martin. We got our championship towels, still waiting on Logano's, of course. And don't forget, we've got the food, of course, too. This was breakfast. We had a prime rib ready for dinner. We'll get to that later. And of course, for our little fantasy pool that we run, this is what we all covet, the Boondocks North Cup. Here's our Canadians watching the last lap of the race.
Oh boy, here comes Jay Bowman, move over. Push your teammate, Bowman, come on!
Den Hoff is gonna win.
Oh God. He's about to get the shuffle back.
Oh!
Side note, I did eat my vegetables before taking this video. And of course, it wouldn't be complete without a trip to Gasoline Alley, also known as the Margarita Tower. Well, there you have it, folks. That was my weekend away at Port Alberni, British Columbia, to watch the Great American Race. I'll throw it back to you guys, but until next time, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Carabine. And that was Adam from Canada going into I am too, buddy. We got to get this show over with. That was Adam from Canada and how he watched the Daytona 500, the Great American Race up there in with our friends to the north. Great to see the excitement and the passion and pageantry still. It knows no bounds in terms of continents or countries or anything like that. It's great to see NASCAR have a global reach, and we hope to see more of that to come. And in that way, it was a very successful Daytona 500 with all the pageantry, the pomp, circumstances. There was a boatload of that. But we're running short on time. Of course, we'll keep you up to date with everything coming and going NASCAR in the weeks to come. And that includes one Richard Petty. God love the king. Those towels are pretty sweet, Adam, by the way. That's pretty big league. I want some of that prime rib. I'll pass on that Canadian bacon you call ham, though. I want my bacon crisp and cooked, baby. All right, but we got a little race preview we got to make happen. Oh yeah, looky there, Auto Club coming up, Fontana. Now, here's what this race is going to be known for. No matter who wins, no matter who does what, this is the final race under the 2 mile configuration. It's being reconfigured into a short track. And so history, no matter what happens this weekend, is happening. So let's talk about it. Look, when you think Auto Club, 2 miler, what are your thoughts on it going to a short track before we make some picks?
I hate it. You know, it for me being the open wheel guy, this was home to one of the best 500-mile races outside of Indianapolis. If you remember the Fontana 500, the last time IndyCar ran an Auto Club and the famous Ryan Briscoe lawn darted into the front straightaway, and, you know, there was like 70 passes for the lead. It was 3 wide, 4 wide at 220 miles an hour. It was one of the best races that I've ever seen live. And, you know, Fontana in the early 2000s, you know, kind of went through this decline. I mean, it was, you know, a track that, you know, was supposed to bring out to the West Coast, but, you know, as the years have gone on, Fontana has become one of the raciest tracks on the calendar that we go to every year. And it was a shame that, you know, we didn't go back in 2021 because of the COVID restrictions and everything like that. I understand the need for more short tracks in the Cup Series. We're going back to one later in the year for the All-Star Race. But there are many short tracks all over the country that they can host a Cup Series race if they wanted to, and NASCAR just won't go there. So I'm ashamed that they're taking a two-mile, really good racetrack into a short track. But, you know, we do need more short tracks, and from what the renders say, it's going to be a Martinsville Straits with Bristol turns. So if that is what we're going to get, then I'm all for it. But I hate to see a racetrack with so much history going to go away.
Well, we'll see what happens. Look, kind of the theme of the show in some ways with Legacy Motor Club and now Auto Club, things evolve. Things constantly evolve and change in NASCAR and in life. So it's going to be interesting to see final 2 mile configuration race. We'll see what happens on the schedule next year as far as what's going to replace it, at least for a year. We'll get in that another time, probably when the schedule actually drops. So with that, as we get closer to the end here, let's make some racing refresh picks. All right, that might be my favorite graphic right there. That looks good. We're in the eye of the storm. We're like Bill Paxton in Twister right there. You ever, that's a big league movie, isn't it? Helen Hunt right there. Yeah, it's a big league movie. All right, so let's recap last week first. Daytona. Peter, that producer Peggy, that better half of mine, her pick of Denny Hamlin came in 17th. She won last week. That puts her one up on us. All right, so Colin, you scored the lowest, so that means you're going to pick first. I'm going to go next. I'm not sure if we got a pick from Adam. And then Mrs. Bragalot, producer Peggy, is going to go last. So, Colin, get us started. Who you got for Auto Club?
You know, last year's Auto Club race was marred by the incident between Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott in the final laps. But I'm going to take someone who had a very strong run throughout the entirety of last year's race, and Logan's going to be so happy. I'm going to take that Jones boy. He's going to go to victory lane.
That Jones? I don't even need to make a pick. Go ahead. He can be right. Who cares if I'm right? That's stupid. Who cares? I don't even want to compete anymore. You kidding me? The 43 going to get back in victory lane? Colin Best had better be right. All right. I hear I got to play. It's 2 mile, right? 2 mile. Well, then it's easy. 2 mile, Kyle. Kyle Larson's going to get it done. Producer Peggy, could you come on in here and tell us your pick? And I believe Adam Carabines as well.
So, Adam's pick is Happy Harvick.
Okay.
My pick was Alex Bowman.
Oh, front row Bowman the showman. So, look, it's bad when I'm rooting against myself, but I see Colin over here and Eric Jones, and that 43 in victory lane would be nice. Because hey, as team ambassador, that's a win for old Rich, too. Let's hope Colin is right, huh? What do you think, Peter? You rooting for Colin? I'm rooting for Colin. I like Colin anyway.
I'm rooting for myself.
Let's go, Team Colin. Come on, Colin. No, that's all right. Like if somebody named Colin can't win, I'll take that guy named Loganity, even though he owes me some money. All righty. So look, it's been a great show. There's been a lot to talk about. There's been a rich and petty discussion that was relevant and needed. There's been great picks. There's been Valentine's looks, and there's been my better half. But every show must end, so that means it's time for a little closing time. Oh yeah, sitting there out there with a rod and reel. I like it, and I'd probably have a sandwich. I'm being honest with you. So, Colin, you're the senior open wheel best man. What's your final words for the evening?
So as we spent an entire time talking about Daytona and now Fontana, but I'm going to go a little over the pond, overseas, as you might say, because this week Formula One opens preseason testing in Bahrain, and now the coverage will be brought to you live here on Racing Refresh. As and also what I'm going to say is my MacBooks have potato quality. This is horrible. I've chosen wrong. But we'll get that fixed for next week. It's only episode 3, so I'll be better. But also, stay tuned to RacingRefresh.com throughout the next coming days as the definitive IndyCar preview comes, the definitive F1 preview comes, and the return of a podcast I like to call Early Apex with Colin Best. That is returning to the Racing Refresh Network for the 2023 Open Wheel season. Join me every hour, or once an hour, every Thursday, as we discuss the everything open wheel racing related. With that, I'm going to toss it over to my best friend, one of my good friends, Logan Morse.
Best friend sitting in this chair. And look, I'm thinking of you every hour on the hour. But I believe in ladies first. So, producer Peggy, what's your final words after another slam bang edition of Racing Refresh Happy Hour?
I'm just speechless. It's just been such a great show that I'm speechless.
You're thinking of Ryan Blaney's Daytona car, aren't you?
Yeah.
Duct tape. If you can't fix it, duck it. And that's what I'm going to need Legacy Motor Club to do, is put some duct tape on that relationship with Richard Petty, because Without him, I'm not Team Legacy Motor Club. I will be Audi 5000. All right, like Andre 3000 and Outcast. It's going to be OUT out. All right. So my final words are this: Trans Am coming back this weekend. That's going to be exciting. Paul Menard on the entry list, as is Wally Dolan back. Anybody remember that name? That's going in the Wayback Machine, isn't it? So Trans Am going to be out at Sebring. I'm going to have a post-race report for you on RacingRefresh.com. I'm going to get those entry lists posted on my social media as well. Speaking of social media, follow us on our socials, please. We want to grow this thing, and we can only grow it as much as you allow us. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at RacingRefresh. Follow at Loganity. Follow at the Colin Best. And follow the heart of my life at PLore97 with a brand new bio you want to check out. So with that, look. We know it's crazy times, but aren't we glad that NASCAR is back to help take away some of the mundane? Am I telling you? As we close down the winter, let's have fun at Fontana one more time on that 2-mile configuration. And I don't know who I'm hoping to write more, me or Colin. Just definitely not Peggy, because I'm competitive. So with that, we'll see you at the next track. I'm going.